The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
Eklund with a shot. He scores! William Eklund caps an astounding comeback. The Sharks win it!
You're listening to the San Jose Sharks Morning Tide. Morning Tide.
Tyler Toffoli on a brilliant feed from William Eklund. Macklin Severini, his first National Hockey League hat trick. Smith shoots. Score! Will Smith just tied the game.
Now, here's your host, Ted Ramey.
The Newman makes sure he gets to the red line before firing it ahead. And the Sharks dump to the offensive territory. Work free by Smith. Sends it across the ice. Oh, stopped by the goaltender in front. Dickinson shoots. He scores! Sam Dickinson gets his first National Hockey League goal in his 10th NHL game, and it ties the score at 2. With only 3:05 to play, what a moment for the youngster.
Yeah, it was exciting. Nice to kind of get out of the way finally, but tough final, I guess, and would have been a little more exciting with a win, but move on to next game.
All right. Good morning, everyone, and welcome. What a great week, in my opinion, for the San Jose Sharks. They got 5 points out of a homestand. They got 3 points out of a back-to-back against two of the better and or best teams early in this NHL season. Sam Dickinson got his first National Hockey League goal. Alex Nedeljkovic played phenomenal. Yaroslav Askarov played phenomenal the night prior. The defense has only given up 2 goals in 3 straight games, and the San Jose Sharks, while far from a complete product, are seemingly trending in the right direction. And no, I don't think this is some changing moment where everything is going to be different. It's just growth. And growth for the sake of growth is what you're hoping for with the San Jose Sharks right now. And I was impressed with the effort they put forth. I was pleased with the way that they played. And I think the more and more that they put up efforts like that, you're going to see them getting points and getting wins and giving themselves an opportunity in every single game. And that was my biggest takeaway out of what we've seen lately for the Sharks. They're giving themselves a chance. You know, stopping with that game at Utah, that was the end of the bad times for the San Jose Sharks. Again, a chance against the Islanders, a win against the Rangers, a chance against Jersey, a win against the Wild, a chance against LA, a win against Jersey, a win against Colorado, and a chance against Detroit. Even on a night where they were tired and depleted, they still gave themselves a very, very good chance. And so the Sharks now find themselves, again, not at the bottom of the NHL, not anywhere near the top. And we're not going to start talking about playoff chances. We're not going to do that until it's actually a reality, whether that's this year or next year or whenever it may occur. But it does feel like things are stepping in the right direction for San Jose. You know, one of my favorite moments out of last night was Macklin Celebrini, you know, going to the box and barking at Seider. I mean, that was such a leadership moment. And listen, Macklin is nowhere near as big as that gentleman on the other side of the ice. So to watch him, you know, barking and chirping and getting into it, that's the type of thing that you want from your leader out there on the ice. And for the entirety of the Sharks team yesterday, you could tell they were tired. You could tell that they didn't have their A game yesterday, but they found a way to give themselves a chance in that game with their less than best. And I think that's one of the important things you need to do in the NHL is figure out how you're going to go about your business when you don't have your A game. I have an interview to get to with Alan Hoshida. He and I talked about a lot of topics after the game last night, after we finished up on NBC Sports California. So I want to get into some of these highlights. So let's start out. It was the Red Wings who struck first after the Sharks, and Red Wings had played kind of a sleepy, albeit hard-fought 0-0 game till the second period.
Sandin Pelikan back skating. Dishes off. Lucas Raymond makes the move on Orlov. Shoots. Score! What a shot! A rocket for Lucas Raymond from the top of the right wing faceoff circle. And it beats Nedeljkovic through a bevy of traffic. 1-0 Red Wings at 18:05 of the second period.
That one was not on net. He was screened in front. Lucas Raymond gets his 4th goal of the year. Detroit's up 1-0. But just 50 seconds into the third period, the Sharks bite back. Jeff Skinner with his fourth of the year ties it up at one, assisted by the red-hot Philip Kurashev and Dmitry Orlov, who continues to be a consistent contributor for the San Jose Sharks in his first season in Teal.
Tipped by Larkin with Wennberg all over him, but Finney rushes over, grabs the puck. He scoots away from Orlov, moves behind the net, and loses on a stick check to Timothy Liljegren. Good first pass out there by Orlov. Here come the Sharks. Kurashev down the left side. Across the blue line. Throwing it toward the front of the net. They score! Jeff Skinner put his stick down on the ice and deflected that Kurashev pass with his backhand. And it goes up top. And we've got a tie hockey game 49 seconds into the third period. And for Jeff Skinner of the San Jose Sharks, that is a big, big goal. Skinner getting his fourth of the season.
I'd like to see Jeff Skinner heat back up. He was hot to start the season, cooled a bit, but maybe that goal can get him going again. Then Seider gave the Red Wings a 2-1 lead in the third period, and suddenly the Sharks were staring up at a deficit once again.
Edvinson keeps it in, left circle, feeds back to Seider on the point. Screenshot, score! Appleton was in the slot against Liljegren and Wennberg, and somehow Moritz Seider, the supremely talented right-handed shooting top defenseman on the Red Wings, got that puck through, and it is 2-1 Detroit.
So the Sharks suddenly staring at a 2-1 deficit on a night where they were clearly not their best, but they kept fighting. This is something that was not in their game previously on a night where they didn't have their best stuff. Like we played on the way in, Sam Dickinson, his first National Hockey League goal.
Uka Meduman makes sure he gets to the red line before firing it ahead, and the Sharks dump to the offensive territory. Work free by Smith. Sends it across the ice. Oh, stopped by the goaltender in front. Dickinson shoots. He scores! Sam Dickinson gets his first National Hockey League goal in his 10th NHL game, and it ties the score at 2. With only 3:05 to play, what a moment for the youngster.
So this one would go overtime where neither team could break through. Then we go to a shootout. You all know how I feel about shootouts. But this one would go the way of Detroit when all was said and done.
Round 4. It's going to be James Van Riemsdyk, the veteran. Big part of the character of the team. Moving it against Nedeljkovic, who waits. Stick handling. Score!
That would be followed by Toffoli getting denied on a backhand, and the Sharks would lose. But like I said, 3 out of 4 points in a weekend back-to-back against two of the hot teams to start off this season. Obviously, Colorado, a traditional power for the last few years. But to talk about all of this and more, Alan Hoshida of NBC Sports and I chatted after last night's game. Alan, let's look big picture. After the 0-4-2 start, the Sharks have played some pretty decent hockey. They put together 4 wins. They had another shootout or overtime loss, as we will qualify it in the standings, with tonight's finish, a loss against Detroit. But if we look at the way this played out for 2 consecutive nights, it was Colorado, and they went all the distance, all the way with San Jose, who won it in overtime. Detroit, one of the top teams in this young NHL season, has to go the distance against a tired and depleted San Jose team who takes it to a shootout. Am I wrong to feel positive at this point?
No, I don't think so. I think 0-4-2 to start, 2 of those games were really rough to see. And since then, every game they've been in, every game they've had a chance to win, they've gotten points on more nights than not at this point in those. They're at 11 points now, 2 games into November. And we saw last year their November was good as well. And you thought, maybe they're going to make a little push. I think this year it's a little different, though. If they do have a good November and early December, I think it's going to cause Mike Greer to really contemplate what they do towards the trade deadline. But going back to your initial thought, yeah, I think they are in a better place. I think mostly because against the Avs and against the Red Wings, they didn't have their A game. And the only way the Sharks were winning the last couple years is if they brought their A game. The only chance they had at winning games was if they brought their A game. If the last 2 games are any indication, is that they're figuring out how to stay competitive with their B and then getting a point in against the Avs, winning. And I think that's something you need to have if you're going to be a successful team in the NHL, because, you know, let's put it frank, any team in the NHL, most times you're not going to have your A game.
Yeah.
Or to give credit to the opponent takes you out of your A game. But you're not going to have it. And so you need to figure out ways to at least get points and then steal some wins. And they have done that.
The Sharks had previously been giving up 3.5 goals per game, roughly. Mm-hmm. Last three games, they've only given up 2. And I understand you can say, well, Colorado was on the second night of a back-to-back. And, you know, San Jose had to play a more defensively structured game against Detroit because they were lacking some of their offensive firepower. But listen, the numbers don't lie. That's 3 straight games of which they're only giving up 2 goals, and you get 5 points out of those games. I don't look at this as, you know, the quote-unquote defensive turning point, but as a theme we keep on going back to, it's indicative of growth on the defensive end. They're showing more structure. They're figuring things out. It's the overarching theme of guys getting to know each other, chemistry, mm-hmm. and it's yielding a better product on the ice. It's easier to win when you don't need 6 goals to win, when you just need 3.
Yeah, and I keep saying, I don't think scoring goals is going to be the issue for the San Jose Sharks this year, as long as everyone stays healthy. Defensively and goaltending, it's going to be the difference to their season. And they brought in basically a whole new defensive core, at least three, so you're having new D pairs, and then they're moving around the first month of the season. And yes, it caused people to think, oh man, this is Meltdown City back there. And just, you got to take some time. You got to have some patience, and it has been better. They've been more structured. Their goalies have been over 940 save percentage the last 3. Mm-hmm. That's not sustainable, but 900, 910 is going to keep you in games.
Yeah.
Anything under 900, you're going to have a tough time winning games. And so I think if they can do that from whoever's in net, Askarov or Nedeljkovic, and then their defensive core can keep things mostly to the outside like they're doing and move more connected and keep those passes from going down the seams, which they've mm-hmm. been doing a better job of, blocking more shots. Yeah, I think it's what you want to see. And again, these are going to just take time. I think everybody wants you to come into a season and hit the ground running. And when you have 10-plus guys coming into the new roster, it's just not the case.
No.
It just can't be. I mean, I know sometimes maybe it happens, but not all the time.
Sam Dickinson plays his 10th game today. We know that he could get sent down. I don't think that's going to occur, but he does come up with a big goal to send this to overtime. He played with great confidence all night, as he's one of the 2 rookies we're paying a lot of attention to. And I know Askarov is still technically a rookie, but we saw a lot of him last year. What have you thought of Sam Dickinson up to this point?
I think early on, you know, the first few games, he's played 10 now, as you just said, he looked like he was trying to figure out the NHL, what was going to happen. I think he was overthinking things a little bit. And then I would say the last week and a half, 3 to 4 games, he started to find some more more opportunities to be offensive. Mm-hmm. And that's part of his game. And I think part of that also helps him defensively because he feels like he's into it. And I really think, you know, maybe this decision wasn't made against the Avs, or he didn't play against the Avs, excuse me, against the Devils. But he looked pretty comfortable in that one, too. So mm-hmm. I wonder if maybe there was some inkling or some notion there that, hey, maybe you're going to stick around. And I think that just takes some weight off of anybody, just like any job. Let's think about any job. I know we look at the professional athletes and it's not any job, and they are privileged to be playing sport and making a lot of money. He's going to make a lot of oodles of money. You know, say an entry-level deal, not the oodles of money, but he's still making a good amount of money. But it's just like any job. When you go into a job and you're looking over your shoulder about your performance every day. Oh, man, did I make a mistake here? Is that spelling error? Is that going to show up? Did I do something wrong? It takes away from your capabilities and what you're able to do. Now he's played his 10th game in the NHL, triggering his entry-level deal, so mm-hmm. his first year is going to be burned no matter what. So, yeah, the Shark could move him down, but I don't see the likelihood of that happening, especially given how he's looked the last couple games. I think he's one of their best 6 defensemen at this point. And to let him do that, now he can be comfortable. He doesn't have to keep looking over his shoulder, so to speak. He can play hard, knowing, you know, I don't think there's any complacency, because he's still 19 years old, loving being in the NHL every night, and he is going to have some nights off where they're going to try and load management or anything, you know, whatever you want to call it. But overall, I think, yeah, you take some of that weight off. You're going to be here. Go play. Be who you are. And Sam Dickinson has always been a guy who's going to put up some points but also play a really sound defensive game because of his skating.
The thing that's different about now compared to what the Sharks did over a decade ago when they brought in Logan Couture and Joe Pavelski and Tomáš Hertl and Timo Meier is just, you know, if they made mistakes, they had so much else to cover for it. Yes. Now when these young guys make mistakes, even Will Smith and Macklin Celebrini a year ago, and even Macklin Celebrini this year, game two against Anaheim, he misplays that overtime and cost the Sharks a win. Not him directly, but that play was not wise. And I think that that's the difference is when you're on a team like this is that those young mistakes, they become that much more prominent. But I also think that's the point. You know, it's like if you're going to have this young team, if you know, barring a miracle, you're not going to make the playoffs. Not that I'm saying they should play like they're not going to play the playoffs. I just think you have to be realistic. You go all in on this youth development. You recognize there are going to be bumps in the road. We're going to see that with Sam Dickinson. We're going to see that with Michael Mesa if he sticks around. It still happens with, you know, Will Smith, Macklin Celebrini, Patrick Giles, Ethan Cardwell, Shakir Mukhmudulin. You know, that's just part of the process.
Who's also looked very good.
He has looked really good since he's come back.
Mukhmudulin has looked very good. I think on top of that, though, maybe I'm jumping the gun, but I think he gives you one of the six best chances to win the game.
Yeah.
On the back end. And that way you're going to put him. Because even that play that he scores a goal, he reads it offensively. He knows what he's going to do. He steps into that zone and he finds a spot. Not every defenseman is going to know where to be and how to make eye contact with Will Smith. As he said post-game, that he made eye contact with Will Smith. You saw his blade was up, ready to go. And so you're going to take some of the good with the bad, but the good is going to outweigh the bad. And when you are one of their most, their better options on the back end, I think you got to play them. And you're going to make mistakes, right? And I think you want them to make mistakes here. You want them to make learn those habits. Ryan Orsovsky talks about habits a lot after practices when you're talking about winning habits. If you go back to juniors, because again, that is the only place he can go, he doesn't have to have the level of focus and intensity that he would need night in and night out in the NHL, even if he's not a plus player at the end of the year as far as plus minus goes. And also, let's also keep in mind, he might go play World Juniors. Last year with Macklin and Will, I don't really think that was on the cards because they needed bodies as much as anything. But there is the opportunity that he goes plays for Team Canada at World Juniors, and that's going to be a big minutes. Like, he's going to be going playing 20 minutes a game and be one of their top six and probably be on a power play there. So we might see, you know, a little bit less of Sam Dickinson through December, and he comes back and maybe he's a different player then. But I just think, like you said, I think we're on the same boat here. The way the team is built, they need to let Sam Dickinson figure this out. And I like, you know, let him fly a little bit. Let him see what his limits are. And you're going to have some times, and there's probably going to be a time, maybe next game after I say this, where he has a turnover and you're like, oh, you can't make that turnover at the blue line. It comes back your other way. But I'd like to see that. I also would like to see, you know, a little bit more freedom with Michael Mesa. He only played one game this week. And I think that's kind of tough on a young player. Again, I know what they're doing. They're stretching out the games played. Also, if the 10th game didn't matter, then why are we stretching out all the games and everything like that? But that's a mute point for time for another day. But they're stretching out those 9 games to see how long they can make it work. But I just think one game a week, I know it's tough. He's going to have to play back-to-backs at some point in his career. You know, the Detroit Red Wings are off to a great start, but I don't see them. If he could play against the Avs, he could play against the Detroit Red Wings. Mm-hmm. That's all. I mean, and so I would love to see Michael Mesa kind of get more, a little bit more freedom to go play a few games in a row. I know he has played, but one here, one there, two here. I just don't know what that really does for his development. And with Sam, we've kind of seen him play a little bit more. And of course, it's up to the player to earn those minutes. But offensively, at least, he's looked pretty good understanding the offensive zone. Yes, defensively, he's an 18-year-old kid. That is Michael Mesa, and he's going to figure that out, you know. But I would just love to see some freedom.
If I had to guess, like, I think they're still trying to keep him in that prove-it mindset. Like you said, World Juniors, that's obviously potentially on the table. But I think they want him to get used to that NHL lifestyle. They want him in the gym. They want him eating. They want him structured. They want him part of that everyday life. And that's probably why they're using this as almost like an extended on-ramp. But I do agree with you. I think that, you know, last year early on, it was only the back-to-backs for the most part that Will Smith was missing, and he was able to get more of a flow of things. Now, to your point, they needed bodies more a year ago. Yeah. This is a different team that has a little bit more depth.
You need bodies now if guys keep going down.
I mean, that's the thing.
Got hurt. It looked like he limped around a little bit. So we don't know what that's going to be. So, yeah, to your point.
Well, who are we talking out right now? We've got Gaudette is out. You've got Ryan Reeves out. You've got Letty out. You've got
Eklund's out.
Eklund out. Well, that's expected to be short term, but we will have to see.
What does that mean, Ted? What does short term mean?
In this modern
what does upper
age?
Body, lower body yeah. mean? Long term, you know, it's all relative. So
yeah, I mean, the injuries have already been a factor early in this season. And of course, it brings about roster decisions. So, well,
the 50 contracts. I think that's also part of it as well. I don't think we talk about it as much, but they're at 50 contracts now, and you can only have 50. And so the other part of it is they can't even, if Michael Mesa gets to 10, at this point right now, the way that the entire roster for the organization is put, he'd be contract 51. So that's also got to be part of the construction of what they're talking about right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good problem to have, I suppose, to where you have the talent that you want. But also, if you pay attention, man, the trade market is even more bandied about early this year than it was last year. And you're already hearing guys talking about Wenberg, and you're already hearing guys talking about Mario Ferraro and Timothy Liljegren. It's not taking long. And that's what Mike Greer has to figure out, Alan, is that if he trades a veteran, is that signaling to the fan base and the team that he doesn't have any faith in them? And I don't think it does, because I think he's saying, we have Sam Dickinson, we have Michael Mesa, we have pieces to bring in, but I know not every fan is going to look at it that way.
Well, I think that's what you go back to November and December. These are big months, you know. And
when did the Blackwood trade happen last year?
Early December.
Early December, yeah.
Early December, he had just saved like 75 shots against Colorado Avalanche or something like that. It wasn't 75, I think it was like 50.
May as well have been.
Yeah. And then it happened, and you know, you could feel the team took a little dip there. I would be surprised if the Sharks go with a trade that early in the season.
I agree.
Especially right now, where they're playing really well. The team has talked about wanting to take a step forward. And if you do it this early in the season, I do kind of feel like it's not the right message you want to send to that dressing room, to your fans, when there is some momentum building, right? And last year, I think it was a little different. Yeah. I think they still kind of were right there, and they had an 0-9 start. They had a better November, but still, after that 0-9 start, you're behind the eight ball quite a bit. So I would be surprised. And the Wenberg one is the one that I circle this year, that he seems like a piece you can't give up if you're going to try and really improve this year, because he has been so good as that second center. I don't know how anybody sees it otherwise. He's just been so good. But now, if we get towards the trade deadline, closer towards that Olympic break, and they're still kind of on the outside looking in, then I don't think it's as much of a bad signal to your dressing room, because you gave him time. Right,
yeah.
You gave him four months. You gave the team 4 months to prove to you that you need to go buy instead of sell. So I would say, if they're going to do something, I would love for them to wait.
Yeah,
and see what this group can give you, because Macklin Celebrini, though his point streak came to an end against the Detroit Red Wings, he's still on pace for 100 points, and these guys are filling it up. And so, give them the chance. Give them a chance. You never know. You never know if they get hot here for the next couple months. They got 11 points already. It's still a long shot. It's still a long shot. But I would love for them to wait. See if this group of young guys who are the fiery, scrappy a bit, see if they could do something special. And then if you get to January and February, you're still in a spot where you're 8-9 points back of a wild card. Then I think, you know, I think everyone would understand the business side of things as well, because then you've given everyone a shot. And that's the only thing about early season trades to me. I think sometimes, especially if you're trading away like some of the guys like Ferraro as well, it's not the right signal you want to send at this point. If you truly are trying to take a step forward, and as Hasso Plattner said, not in the Gavin McKenna sweepstakes.
I know that we talked earlier on TV about the absence of William Eklund, but as a last one here, we got to talk about Macklin Celebrini, because you and I last year, we did not say what we felt on TV and in public as consistently, because you and I were kind of saying, like, no, he's already playing like a top 10 player in the NHL. I think it's already very apparent that he is now a top 10 player in the NHL. I mean, the way he has performed, the way he has played so far up to this point, he is... I mean, he's incredible, Alan. I don't know the last time I saw an athlete this good, this young, burst onto the scene. I think the only comparison in recent memory is probably Tim Lincecum, to where he arrived and it was like, oh, holy Lord, this is different. Yeah. This is unique. This is dominant. This is superstar.
Yeah, and I was trying to go back, and Joe Thornton, he would have must-see plays, and Patrick Marleau was a game-breaker with speed, but I don't remember the last time the Sharks had a guy that you did not want to miss a shift.
No.
You know, when that power play for the Sharks was really good with Boiler, Danny Heatley, Thornton, Marleau, and there was no way you're leaving that power play.
No.
But like right now, it's like I don't want to get up because I don't know. Well, A, when Macklin's going to get on ice, because it's not super routine. It is routine, but like it's, you know, kind of all over the place sometimes. And it's just must see. And he's doing things that are making the entire hockey world talk. And it's starting to trickle, I think, into the Bay Area sports landscape, which is good. You're going to want to try and win back some of the fans that you had when during your heyday. And he just is a difference maker. I mean, he's quick. He's super. I don't know if he's super fast.
Well, his like, burst, according his to burst, the metrics, is right there in the top of the league.
But I don't know how long that is. Yeah. But I think his first three steps are elite.
Yeah.
Elite. He plays the game incredibly fast. He thinks the game incredibly fast. And he's on one side of the ice, the other. And he's bringing other guys with him. I think that's the other thing is that I think the guys in that dressing room already know that he is going to be a superstar if he's not already, and they need to play to the standard that he's going to hold them to. And you saw it against hear him talk about in that first intermission against the Avs that the team was just flat.
Yeah.
And that they came out, and that's not acceptable. And he's also learned how to say those things, I think, a little bit better this year, whereas last year, you know, he's 18, and he's just 18, saying what he needs
to
say.
Well, when he was barking in the box tonight.
Oh, that was great.
That was like a 10-year veteran not taking any blank from anybody.
No, but he won't. And that's the other thing is that Sider, you know, gets the interference, and he's just going to push back right away. And the guys, he's not going to be a superstar that other guys are going to be able to push around. No. I don't know if he's ever going to fight. Hopefully, I mean, he shouldn't, because there should be someone.
You need those hands to be safe.
Someone else should step in there. But he's going to be a bulldog. I think he's going to be a dog. He's got that dog in him. Get that X-ray going. He's got dog in him.
He's got that dog in him. And I love that, you know, we talk about that game-winning goal against Minnesota in overtime. He also had that absolute snipe against Colorado. But to me, maybe even more so, was that pass to Will Smith against L.A., the one that made Dan Boyle go, oh, my God. If you're making Dan Boyle just absolutely shake his head in disbelief at that pass going between the legs to set up Wilson. I mean, you talk about Joe Thornton. I think of players that I've seen in my lifetime that could have even attempted that pass. It's like Jumbo, McDavid. I mean, that's a short list.
Yeah. And Kucherov.
Yeah. That was such a – and I mean this in the most positive way, but it was stupid because it did not jive with reality. It was beyond comprehension. It was like, what was that?
Yeah, when he's going, he's going. And when he starts taking over a game, I think it's super noticeable this year that he is going to take over a game. That was through three guys. I also remember I believe it was the Avs game, or it might have been the Devils game, but he goes in with three defenders and comes out with the puck.
Yeah.
Like it's into the corner, comes out with it, and not like he didn't have to work very hard for it. He just knows where to put his stick to get the puck, and he gets the puck, and he's going to do something special with it. And you know, there's going to be nights where he doesn't have it fully. Like you know, the Detroit Red Wings did a good job taking him kind of out of his game and what he wanted to do. They were hard on him. He wasn't great in the faceoff dot. But he still had moments where he was the most noticeable player.
Yeah.
And I think that's also important that even when he's not got his A game going, he's still going to be impactful in some way. I do think, though, on the other side of it, this was a game that if the Sharks were going to win handily, it was going to need to be a first-line game, because William Eklund's not there. William Eklund's been your second-best forward.
He's been so good.
And if he was on any other team, he'd be their best forward on their team probably. But he's also one of their main drivers of offense. And so when you're losing that and going into the season, or going into the game, excuse me, you kind of know. We kind of said it's like, man, the top line's got to be the top line if they're going to do something here to get their third straight win. You know, it didn't fully happen. I think to another point of their maturity is this week they've handled moments and games a whole lot better. They went into the third period against the Red Wings, down 1-0, mm-hmm. earned a point. They went down 2-1 in the third period and came back and earned a point. And a bigger notion is you said they're going to go into overtime. Like, even when they went down. And I don't know if a couple years ago or even last year, like, oh, yeah, they're coming back in this game to tie it up. So I think you're starting to find some belief from people around the team, within the team, that this Sharks group is heading in the right direction. It's trending in the right direction. It's led by number 71. And the Sharks really, this season for sure, are going to go as far as Macklin Celebrini takes them.
All right, Alan, I think we've said enough, man. Appreciate your time as always. Wednesday, 6:30, you are with Mark Smith on NBC Pre and Post.
That is correct.
Boom, there it is. Alan Hoshida, thanks so much, man. See you soon. We're out of time. I will see you all on Wednesday as we get ready for the Kraken. For the San Jose Sharks, I'm Ted Ramey, signing off.
This podcast can be found on demand anytime on the Sharks Plus SAP Center app. All music by Yogi Yend.